the J-Talk Podcast.
Yes. Alex Valera. And Redmayne makes the save.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, we've got a lot to discuss about the Samurai Blues, two games since we last recorded. But off the top of this week's podcast, let me bask in a little bit of a Socceroos glory, would you?
Yeah, absolutely. Take anything away from the way Japan have just played. Congratulations on making the World Cup. I thought Australia played pretty well, to be fair, against Peru. I was with you all the way until you got some dancing idiot come on to take for the penalty shootout. And after those first two, I was a little bit worried for Australia. But, I mean, he's pulled through. So congratulations. And it'll be great to see you at the World Cup. It's a fresh new group with France and Denmark. You've never played them before.
Yes, deja vu all over again. But, well, we wouldn't have it any other way because, obviously, for Australia, things were extremely dicey. Well, yeah, from about the halfway stage of the final qualification group, wasn't it? And then, having to negotiate two playoff games. But, we've managed to eke past Peru on penalties on Tuesday morning Japan time. Yes, thanks to new national hero Andrew Redmayne, a feel-good story. And, he's written his name into Australian sporting lore with his, save to win it there and to send Australia to Qatar and, into Group D of the World Cup. I guess from an Australian perspective, a couple of things worked in our favour here in the final game against Peru, Sam. I guess we're fortunate it was a one-off game. Because I guess if it had been a home and away, maybe the overall class of Peru would have shone through. But yeah, I think they got a little bit of stage fright, didn't they? The Peruvians, they certainly were not at their best after a campaign that obviously saw them finish fifth in the incredibly tough South American qualification phase. So for them, it's obviously heartbreaking. But for Australia, yeah, obviously we'll take it. And we battled through and we've made it to Qatar.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Peru, just you watch the game there, it looked like it was a Peru home game. I think they had 90% of the crowd. It was absolutely packed and they did fantastic. Those supporters were amazing, really. But unfortunately for them, their team just didn't turn up. You've got to think they're a better side than what they put out yesterday. They didn't really carve through Australia at all. They didn't create too many chances. I think a lot of credit has to go to Australia for how well organised they were defensively, but they looked the more likely team to go forward and score as well. So, yeah, just a poor day at the office for Peru. I think Australia played well, and on the night, I thought, deserved the victory. So, yeah, congratulations again.
Thank you very much. And, this was obviously one of the two huge World Cup qualification playoff games this week. As we record on Tuesday night after Japan have just played Tunisia, we obviously don't know what has happened in the New Zealand versus Costa Rica playoff. But thanks to the magic of editing, we can send our commiserations to the New Zealand side for battling all the way to the final hurdle, but ultimately falling to Costa Rica, who now join Japan, Germany and Spain in Group E in Qatar. All right, then. So moving on to the Samurai Blue. And two games to chat about since our last recording. After the 4-1 win over Ghana in Kobe last Friday night, we were hoping to finish off this lengthy international break on a high. But Tunisia certainly burst Japan's bubble at the Suita City Stadium on Tuesday night.
Oh, they certainly did. I mean, before that, I thought the previous three games had been fairly positive. I mean, you can say what you want maybe about the quality of opposition in Paraguay. They didn't really have anything to play for or build to. And Ghana hadn't really brought their best team over for whatever reason. There were a few players short from their strongest lineup. So it was a weakened team that Japan beat. But they did play, I thought, very well against Ghana. It was obvious to me that when you play Mitoma and Doan and Kubo, you get a more vibrant attack, and they definitely were. They created chances and scored four good goals. So, yeah, that was positive. And then we spoke about Brazil last week, which was a good performance, a different performance, but I thought a pretty decent one. But, yeah, this game was an absolute nightmare, really. And I had my concerns as soon as the lineup was announced. It just looked like Moriyasu had gone back to that kind of functional team with only Ito's there, the only one who might have that sort of spark. And yeah, they played out that way. I thought first half Japan, yeah, had the slightly better chances, didn't create too much, but missed a couple of sitters. I mean, Kamada's was the worst. And then second half defensively, I mean, Maya Yoshida, I mean, unfortunately is at fault at least in part for all three of the goals. And yeah, Japan were, yeah, really wasteful in front of goal and poor defensively. So yeah, a very poor way to end. And yeah, we're back where we were for most of qualifying and being quite down on Moriyasu's Japan.
Yeah, most definitely. I was must admit to be watching this game a little bit more closely than I otherwise would have been after the result on Tuesday morning, of course, with Tunisia in Group D with Australia, France and Denmark in Qatar. So, yeah, I was very curious to check Tunisia out. I wasn't able to catch any of their 2-0 win over Chile last Friday afternoon that saw them, yeah, make this Kitten Cup final against Japan. But yeah, they were certainly extremely well organized, and well, especially in the second half when Japan were looking to get their way back into the game, there was no way through the rock solid Tunisian defense. So that will certainly prove to be a stern test for all of their group opponents, I think, in Qatar. But yeah, obviously we're here to talk about things from a Japanese perspective. So yeah, 8 changes to the starting 11 from the Ghana game. And yeah, as you say, you and you tweeted, yeah, you weren't that rapt about the starting 11. But yeah, I think it's fair to say that the first half chances, the majority of them, or the clear-cut ones, did fall to the Japanese side. And yeah, how Daichi Kamada's missed 10 minutes before halftime, that ball in from the right from Junya Ito, who certainly had a purple patch in the last 20 or 25 minutes of the first half, didn't he, Sam? Ito showed all of his attacking capabilities down that right-hand side and, yeah, whipped a ball in to Kamada, who on the slide, all he had to do was make any sort of contact from 2 yards out. But unfortunately, the ball squirmed under his body. Then we had Takumi Minamino score a disallowed goal. He was fractionally offside after Ko Itakura held his pass a little bit too long, and Minamino was unable to check his run. I must admit, Sam, the way that Minamino has been playing for Japan lately, when I saw Ito flash that ball across the box and Kamada miss, my first instinct was it was probably Minamino who had missed it, because obviously he's had a bit of a rough time in this international break, hasn't he? And I guess for the majority of us, his place in the team should be up for debate. But it seems that, yeah, Mr. Moriyasu, whenever he's pushed into a corner, he seems to always want to back Minamino, even though he doesn't seem suited to play on the left, as we mentioned last week, and have numerous times throughout the last few international breaks.
Yeah, well, I was the same as you. I thought it was Minamino. So I think, I don't know what that says about him and the way he's perceived there in the national team. And I think there were a couple of people that tweeted like, oh, God, Minamino again, before realising it was Kamada. So, yeah, it just kind of sums up where he has been. But, yeah, this time it was Kamada. But, yeah, Minamino not suited. I still don't think he's suited to that left wing position. I don't think he really offers anything from that position. He wants to drift in all the time and just comes into trouble. And I've not seen him create too much. I mean, he's better in the centre, but even he moved there in the second half and still was fairly anonymous. So, yeah, I think most people would have him as a question mark, at least as a starter, and maybe even in the squad if you're going that far. But, yeah, he just seems to be one of those that's going to be playing for Moriyasu. And he's got those favourites in his side that he's just got, oh, we're going to always just have to accept, I think, because I still don't understand how anyone can watch Kaoru Mitoma play on that left wing and then when push comes to shove, still revert back to Minamino. It doesn't make too much sense to me. If he was going to play, I'd play him in the centre. But, yeah, he wants to play a slightly withdrawn midfield three. So, yeah, for me, I don't know how he gets in. He doesn't get into the team for me. But then You're looking at it, is Minamino even an impact sub in this team? I don't really think so. You kind of want two Mitomas, or Mitoma and Maeda is the way I would probably go if I was looking at it. But yeah, he's going to be there, and I think we're just going to have to accept that Minamino will be there against Germany in November.
Well, that's it. I mean, we're going to come on to talk about, you know, players who we think have maybe, yeah, already punched their ticket to Qatar, or maybe players we would like to see added to the national team setup between now and, yeah, the start of the World Cup. But I think, I mean, you know, we want to do this, and we want to, you know, suggest things that we think would help take Japan forward. But I think at the same time, we might just be... not wasting our breath, Sam, but I mean, you know, it's unusual for a leopard to change his spots, isn't it? So I think Mr. Moriyasu has obviously set out his stall. That's a huge understatement. We pretty much know what we're going to get from his teams, and we know what personnel he's going to call up on a an international break by international break basis. So all of our great ideas, the chances of him actually pushing the boat out, in inverted commas, and taking a chance on somebody from left field, and maybe leaving a Minamino or a Kubo, for example, out of the squad entirely, are almost certainly not going to happen. But I think one thing that you tweeted in the second half, and I replied by saying, well, there's a question that I won't be able to ask you on the podcast, but I guess we're going to talk about the topic anyway. And it is Japan captain Maya Yoshida, who you've mentioned already was at fault in some part for all three of the Tunisian goals in the second half. He conceded the penalty inside the first 10 minutes of the second half that was dispatched. Then after a pretty bizarre miscommunication with Ko Itakura, was then bullied off the ball and watched on in horror as his man cut the ball back to a teammate to fire past Daniel Schmidt. And then was involved in the third one when actually terrific finish, but another horror show from a Japan perspective. And you tweeted that Moriyasu might have to consider going with Takehiro Tomiyasu and Ko Itakura as his preferred centre-back pairing against Germany when the World Cup gets underway. I had already planned to ask you whether he should just give the armband to Wataru Endo now and maybe not have to make a more difficult call on Yoshida later on. But, I mean, Yoshida, you can't be making mistakes like he's made tonight against teams of the quality of Germany or Spain or even New Zealand or Costa Rica.
Oh, absolutely. And then it was just the manner of the mistakes as well. I think Ghana as well, he made a mistake. It's just kind of his speed of thought isn't quite there, and his turning circle seems to have gone. So, he was just very slow to react to things. And I was thinking before this game, and I know I haven't got the Twitter evidence to back this up, but I was still thinking maybe, like, Itakura had played so well against Brazil and generally has had a very good season in Germany, and just thought he's got to be knocking on the door. So before these friendlies, I was thinking, is he going to try a back three? Because obviously he played a back three for Hiroshima for so many years. And think, okay, if he's got Tomiyasu and Itakura either side of Yoshida, does that help him out? And would it be something they test? Obviously, Tomiyasu has been injured, so he hasn't gone in that direction. But yeah, I was considering how to support Yoshida. And then these few games, I think Itakura has generally played a lot better than him. He's making silly mistakes. So I think you've got to play Tomiyasu. I think he's the best defender Japan have. And Itakura at the moment seems to be surpassing Yoshida. So I think it's got to be a consideration. Again, as with most of the squad, I don't anticipate it happening. I expect my Yoshida to be captain and to lead out Japan through all three World Cup group games. But yeah, I think it's got to be a real consideration at the moment because, yeah, those sorts of performances, you cannot afford any sort of mistakes like that against any of the teams that Japan are going to face in that World Cup group, and especially the likes of Germany and Spain.
Yeah, most definitely. Whether he would have the courage isn't the right word, but have the even the thought to not play Yoshida is something that, you know, we we just presume that Mr. Moriyasu will just stick to what he's done. But yeah, hopefully this a result like this and a second half performance from Yoshida is, you know, it's got to open his eyes to the possibility at least of trialing a pairing of Itakura and Tomiyasu, and that would be the pairing that I would go for. Again, we're thinking for Mr. Moriyasu, and you know, we are fully aware that what we hope for will probably not happen, but that's our recommendation to the boss. So obviously, yeah, this is a bit of a chastening result for Japan after what had been up till Tuesday night a fairly impressive international break. Of course, way back on the 2nd of June, Japan beat Paraguay 4-1 up in Sapporo. Then we had the 1-0 loss to Brazil, a fighting performance and one that Japan took a lot of credit away from. Then, yes, last Friday night in Kobe, they took on Ghana, Japan, and ran out 4-1 winners. Miki Yamane opened the scoring just before the half hour, but then basically gave the goal back to Ghana just before halftime with a terrible pass out of defense that ended up at the feet of Jordan Ayew, who flashed a shot past Eiji Kawashima. We might have to have a chat about him being in goal for one of these games as well, Sam, while Keisuke Osako watched on in all four games. But there was still time for Japan to reclaim the lead before halftime when Kaoru Mitoma's cross evaded everyone in the center and went in off the keeper's left-hand post. Then we had the scene that we'd all been waiting for, Takefusa Kubo scoring his first Japan goal in the 73rd minute after a trademark surging run into the box on the left from Mitoma, who cut back for Kubo to volley home via a deflection. And then Daisen Maeda wrapped up the scoring in the 82nd minute, just 2 minutes after he'd come on for ISA Wada, tapping in from a yard out after a run and cross from Junya Ito. So from that game, Sam, I don't obviously want to talk about the entirety of the 90 minutes, but players like Wada, I think ones that we are going to have to talk about when we're piecing together our Japan squad. So he got 80 minutes against Ghana, obviously didn't score, but was one of the ones who was the target of Mitoma's cross just before half time. So obviously, if he could have got on the end of that, that would have been an important goal for him to score. There was an early header that went straight to the keeper. So Wada's performance against Ghana, has it done him any good, do you think, for his World Cup prospects overall?
I don't think it's done any harm. I don't think he played quite as well as he would have hoped for. I don't think he was quite as involved as he would hope for. I mean, the crosses, there were quite a few coming in, but not many kind of found their way to him. I mean, what he would give to have been in Maeda's position just after he came on for that tap in a yard out, I mean, that would have done him the world of good. But I think he played fairly well. I thought his movement was reasonable and just, yeah, a couple of inches either way, and then he might have found his way onto the end of a few more things. So I think he played reasonably well. I think he gives a different option to Osako and Furuhashi. I think he's a slightly cleverer striker in like kind of those pockets in the area. So I think he's given himself a reasonable chance, but unfortunately he didn't play for Sanfrecce Hiroshima and he's not nicknamed a Jaguar. So I think he's maybe out of luck.
Yes. Well, so we're going to come on to talk about some of the players that we think are already on the plane to Qatar and maybe some that might be able to push for a place in the EAFF Cup that comes up in the second half of July. But, I can't let that pass without asking about Moriyasu's decision to give Eiji Kawashima another game, Sam. I don't think any of us can really understand it. I mean, obviously, his veteran presence around the squad is something that Moriyasu seriously values. You've got Keisuke Osako waiting in the wings, for my mind, fully deserving of a chance to show what he can do. We've got Gonda and Schmidt who have proven both capable custodians. So I don't think Kawashima needs to be involved anymore. But obviously, Moriyasu clearly feels differently.
Yeah, I don't get it at all. I mean, he's 39. He's not the one for the future. He's not, shouldn't be one for the present. Like, if you want experience, I mean, Gonda's 33. I mean, he doesn't need a helping hand anymore. Nor does Schmidt. He's 30. Yeah. I mean, you're not building. If he's that important, bring him along as a goalkeeping coach or something. But, you know, why Osako hasn't got... They've played four games. They brought four goalkeepers. Why has Osako not actually been given any minutes? I don't know. What was the point of him? You've got to... If he's there, he needs experience. And, yeah, why haven't you played him? It doesn't make sense to me. I don't know what you get by having Kawashima play. I mean, he doesn't need the extra caps. He doesn't need the experience. He doesn't need any of it. But, again, it's just one of those things that, I mean, Kawashima has just been there for Japan. That's just what it has been. But I think he's just, like, kind of etched into the team sheet that he has to be there. It's just... I didn't want him at the last World Cup, and still 4 years later, he's still there. So, yeah, it's another one that you're just going to have to accept it, and maybe 2026 in the US, we'll still be having this debate.
Yeah, he'll be a sprightly 43 by then. So, yeah, I'm sure he'll still be, if Moriyasu's still in the job, then yeah, he'll probably still be involved. So, yeah, well, obviously up until Tuesday night, it was overall a positive international break for Japan, but fair play to Tunisia. Yes, if we haven't given them enough credit, well, that's because we're a podcast about Japanese football. But yeah, Tunisia turned up and absolutely deserved their Kirin Cup title after a superb second half performance saw them sweep aside Japan 3-0, and to the delight, of course, of their small band of supporters who absolutely loved what they were seeing, and fair play to them. So well done to Tunisia. We've obviously still got 5 months until the World Cup, Sam, and So just before we finish talking about the Samurai Blue, we're going to share our thoughts about the players that we think are already, in inverted commas, on the plane to Qatar. Obviously, with any injuries or anything like that taken out of the equation, if all were fair and true, who we think that Moriyasu would absolutely, without question, have in his squad at the moment. And then we're maybe going to throw a few names from left field, as in the previously mentioned EAFF Cup in the second half of July, Moriyasu will call up an entirely J-League-based squad of players. So there is... as unlikely as it might be, there is a small opportunity for a couple of players perhaps to really burst through in that competition, with Japan playing against Hong Kong, China and South Korea, to push for a spot on the plane. So how many names have you got on Mr. Moriyasu's squad list at the moment as we sit here on Tuesday night after Japan have just played Tunisia?
Yeah, I've got 18. I think that's mainly because it's fairly predictable the way that Moriyasu picks his squad. There aren't too many. I think there are a few positions up for grabs, but yeah, I've got 18 that I'd be pretty confident that are nailed on if fit. How about yourself?
Yeah, I've got 16. So just to clarify, have you got Hiroki Sakai and Yuya Osako in your list of 18?
Yes.
You have. Okay, so I haven't, because... I think there's enough question marks about fullback, and now I think the waters have been slightly muddied up front, so I'm not entirely confident about Sakai and Osako, but okay. Yeah, okay. So how many keepers have you got?
I've got two that I think are guaranteed. Well, three really, because Kawashima was probably the third one. But yeah, I've got two in Gonda and Schmidt. I think are definitely going to be there as the number one and number two in whatever order. It's interesting. He's given Schmidt two of the games during this this kind of international break, and I mean, couldn't have much to do about the three goals conceded tonight, and played fairly well against Paraguay in that first one. So yeah, be interested to see which way he goes on that. But yeah, I think those two, and then Kawashima is probably the third, but I think Tani and Osako should be in consideration.
Yeah, okay, well, I've got the same two, but yes, with the caveat that yeah, Kawashima is almost certainly going to be the third keeper in the squad. Now I'm not sure if we went about this slightly differently, Sam, but yeah, so in defense, I've only got four names, and I haven't included Yuto Nagatomo, even though he's obviously plays for my favourite team and is a fixture in Japan squads and has been for over a decade now. I just wonder whether by the time November comes around, he just might be completely burnt out, because we know that international break to international break, he can barely get through 60 minutes in a game for Japan. So I wonder at the end of a what's going to be a compacted, you know, J-League season, whether he will actually have that much gas left in the tank. I guess I probably should have included him, and he probably almost certainly, again, caveat upon caveat there, will be on the plane. But he actually wasn't in my 16. The four definites I've got from defence are Yoshida, Tomiyasu, Itakura, and Yuta Nakayama, who wasn't used tonight for whatever reason, wasn't even in the squad, was given the night off. But yeah, so I only went for four absolute nailed-on certainties in defence. How many did you go for at the back?
Yeah, well, I've got eight, so I've got the four that you mentioned. Yeah, I've got Nagatomo as well. I've also put Yamane and Sakai. I think there's not really the options aren't great at right back. I think if both of those are fit, I'm not really sure I can look past them. And I don't think Moriyasu looks past them. And I've put Taniguchi in as well, because he seems to have just made every squad. I don't think he's a starter at the World Cup, but the other options, maybe Nakatani can come in, but then after that, Naomichi Ueda, and I don't want to be in a position where Naomichi Ueda's in the World Cup squad. So, yeah, I've been a little bit more forthright with my picks, but yeah, I think they're a definite concern. I completely take your point on Nagatomo. I think left back is absolutely an issue. I mean, Nagatomo is obviously can't last through many games and is going to come to the end of the season. Nakayama is being played out of position there. Ito we've seen as a centre back playing out on the left at left back. So there is definitely an option there. I think that when we get onto the EF Cup, I think that's where we could maybe see a couple of left backs, like proper left backs, stake their claim, because yeah, full back definitely an issue for Japan. And yeah, what's your thinking at right back? Obviously you weren't set on Sakai.
Well, yeah, just if we're talking about nailed on for this the final squad, yeah, I'm just not sure where he's going to be. He obviously hasn't featured for a while for Japan now, so I think we'll just wait and see. And it's definitely a concern. I think both fullback positions are a worry. And obviously Sakai, if he's fit and available and fired up to go, then he is the best option. But I think it's still up in the air about where he's going to be about the time that Moriyasu is going to have to make the tough calls. So that's why he wasn't in my absolutely nailed on group. But he's in brackets, let's put it that way. So he was definitely under consideration. But for me, it's still a little bit up in the air with him. I guess recently Japan have been grouping all midfielders and forwards together, haven't they, Sam? Let's try and break it up a little bit for the benefit of the listeners. So I don't think we're going to have any disagreements, are we, that Wataru Endo and Ao Tanaka are going to be involved?
No, I've got both of those.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, I guess if it was up to me right now, Endo would be Japan's captain in the opening game against Germany. But again, we're relying on Mr. Moriyasu here, so that's almost certainly not going to happen. So in terms of the three in midfield, I've also got Genki Haraguchi there. I would love to include Hidemasa Morita, but again, I don't know where he's going to be at fitness wise. So right now, I guess I'm probably clouded by the fact that he wasn't, hasn't featured in this series of internationals. Would he be a nailed on player if he had played in at least a couple of these games? Then perhaps he might have been. So he was certainly in my thoughts as well and in brackets on my list. But I only went for three in terms of the main three in central midfield. How about you, Sam?
I had Morita, as in if Morita's fit, I'd say he's definitely there. I mean, I think he's one of the best midfielders Japan has. He's been linked with quite heavily to a move to Sporting Lisbon after impressing at Santa Clara. So I think, if fit, Morita comes in. There are a few, as you mentioned, these fitness concerns that are slightly worrying for Japan. But yeah, I think Moriyasu ideally wants to go Endo, Morita and Tanaka. So that was my three. I had Haraguchi as the bracket, so we've just swapped that over. I think he's played fairly well in the games over this break. He's played into central midfield a lot more than previously. So, yeah, he's probably another one that's there. And then Moriyasu has in brackets Shibasaki, because it doesn't seem to want to drop Shibasaki. But, yeah, he wouldn't make my 23. I don't know about you.
No, well, that name is going to come up when, yeah, where we talk about players who might push for a spot in the EAFF Cup. So we'll park Shibasaki for the moment and come back to him. But yes, he wouldn't be in my 23 at the moment. So on the flanks, I guess behind the striker, then Junya Ito, Ritsu Doan, Takumi Minamino, Kaoru Mitoma, and Daichi Kamada are all certainties for me. And I've got Takefusa Kubo in brackets, Sam, because as exciting as he can be, I think over the course of this international break, we've seen that, Moriyasu, one game aside, is not prepared to throw him in to the biggest games. I mean, yeah, he didn't start against Brazil, for example. That would have been a great place for Kubo to really establish himself in the manager's thoughts. But yeah, he appears to be on the fringes for me. And I guess if somebody breaks through and disrupts the status quo, then for me, amongst this group, then yeah, Kubo's place is arguably the most at risk.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I've got Kubo as at risk. In fact, I've got quite a few in the more at risk category than they're nailed on certainties in this position. The only one I've got, the only three I've got as nailed on are Ito and Mitoma, because you're an idiot if you don't pick both of them. And I think Minamino is going to go. I don't necessarily agree with that in starting every game, but I'm pretty sure he's going to be in the squad. So then I've got Kamada, Kubo, Doan, and Maeda I've clumped in this bit. Maybe you've got him in the striker section, but I think they're all interesting cases. I think Kamada has not always been favoured by Moriyasu, despite playing pretty regularly for Frankfurt. He plays in generally as that number 10, and Japan don't play with the number 10. So, yeah, I don't think he's done that well, to be fair, in these few games in this international break. So I think he's one that's on the edge. I think Doan and Kubo are in similar boats, and that they're probably going to move this summer. I mean, Kubo has played for Mallorca. Then I think Javier Aguirre came in and he lost his place and barely played towards the end of the season. So he's got a decision to make, because obviously he wants to play for Real Madrid, but I just don't think that's going to happen. First of all, you've got foreign quota problems that means he's not going to get in anyway. But just generally speaking, I don't think he's quite at that level. So he's got to make a decision. If he's not getting game time at Mallorca, he's got to make he's so set on playing in Spain. Like, I know that I don't want this to be a pro-Celtic podcast or anything, but just think, maybe you go with Ange Postecoglou. I think there's a similar move to what he did to Yokohama, really kick-started his career in Japan. I just think he needs that sort of move to get regular game time. Someone that believes in him, doesn't want to just go defensive and not use him because he doesn't necessarily fit the way that the manager wants to play. So I think he's got a real decision to make, and I think that could have a real bearing on whether he makes this 23, because I think he's right on the edge at the moment. And then Doan is similar. I think he's kind of under consideration by Ruud van Nistelrooy at PSV Eindhoven. He's one that might leave, might stay. And yeah, whether that works out, if he stays and van Nistelrooy, the new manager, believes in him, then it might be great for him. But yeah, if he's going to be a bit part player as well, I think that could put his place at risk. Even though I think he's played quite well again in these four games, I think, yeah, he's on the edge as well. So a lot to consider, I think, for Moriyasu in these positions. This is where I think most things are up for grabs.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, so I guess we've differed the most here from my perspective. Yeah, you had more defenders nailed on, whereas I think a bit more certainty in the the attacking midfielder and wing area. So that's really interesting. But yeah, you make really interesting points. And I mean, Minamino is obviously a player who is likely to be on the move as well. And as important as he was to Liverpool so many times throughout this season just finished, I think for his for his own prospects, as sad as I would be to see him leave, it would be probably the best for his career to be playing on a far more regular basis. And that's another move to certainly keep our eyes on over the course of the summer transfer window, and how it might shake out, and ultimately affect Mr. Moriyasu's decisions with some really key players and obviously high profile names in the Japanese game, and Mr. Moriyasu might have to make one or two tough calls in these positions, especially if a couple of players really knock the door down in the EAFF Cup that we're going to chat about shortly. So finally, let's wrap it up front. Sam, one name I'm kind of resigned to seeing on the plane, and one name I'm very excited that will be there. In respective order, as I've just mentioned them, Takuma Asano, I'm almost certain, will be going to Qatar, and as will Kyogo Furuhashi, who is obviously, hopefully, the future for Japan up front. I would have loved to include Daisen Maeda here, and he's certainly in brackets. But alongside Yuya Osako and ISA Wada, with a couple of players we're going to talk about that might make the EAFF squad who could be late bolters. So for me, there's only two I'm very, very confident about up front. How about yourself?
Yeah, well, I'm with you on Furuhashi, even though he's not really played a lot in these games. He started that one game, but didn't get a game at all against Ghana. He didn't come on, and he played half an hour here, but didn't really get too much of the ball. So I don't think he's necessarily done his chances of the world of good in these games, but I think he should be there. And I went Osako as well, because I just think Moriyasu loves Osako. Whenever he's been fit, he's played. And I think he's the striker that suits the way Moriyasu is playing the best out of all of them. The others are all going to try and break the line, and I don't think Japan necessarily have the players that are playing those through passes to them. I think Osako, just the way he tucks in, I think he's the more suited. So, yeah, I think he's there. Asano is in the Kawashima boat, then he's probably going to be there. I don't know why. Asano is quick, but he just runs, and I don't think his movement is very clever. I don't think he's great at finishing when he does get on to the end of anything. I just think there are so many better options. If you're looking at Maeda, if you're looking at Ueda, we'll go on to others in the later on that should be there and haven't been considered. But yeah, Asano for me shouldn't be anywhere near the 23, and I'm sure he's a nice guy, but yeah, he just wouldn't be there for me. But yeah, I can see where you're going from, that he's probably absolutely nailed on under Hajime Moriyasu.
Indeed. All right, then. So, listeners, feel free to let us know if you disagree with any of our picks, or if there's any others you think are nailed on at this stage of proceedings. Obviously, there's a lot of water to go under, a lot of bridges in the 5 months before Japan play Germany, and probably the 4 months or so before Moriyasu has to actually name his final 23. I don't have that date in front of me, but it's obviously a few months into the future. But just how nailed on some of these players are, you can feel free to let us know on Twitter, or indeed in the comments to this episode, either on Patreon or wherever you listen to your pods. All right, then. So, hopefully there'll be some J-League players banging down the door at the EAFF Cup in the second half of July. So we've just finished wrapping up the strike force that we think are nailed on for Qatar, Sam. So why don't we just stick with that theme and talk about if there are any forwards that we think might be able to stake their claim for a late berth in the World Cup 23. Personally, I think my two the two names that I've got written down are maybe unlikely to even make the squad for the EAFF Cup, but I would love to see Moriyasu bury the hatchet with Yuma Suzuki, give him a chance to bring him back into the Japan national team fold. And along similar lines, but it's not an attitude problem. It's been a getting game time problem in recent years for Yoshinori Muto. But hopefully his return to Japan and playing regularly, of course, for Vissel Kobe, his early fitness concerns from earlier on in the season appear to be past him, and hopefully Muto will be back to his best in as the J League resumes this coming weekend. So for me, Sam, yeah, obviously these are experienced players, players that have performed in Europe in the past, and coming back to the J League, I hope to see them in the EAFF squad, and if they can both do well, then perhaps they might be knocking on the door of the World Cup squad.
Yeah, absolutely. I've picked exactly the same too as you. I think Suzuki, just such an all-round striker. I think he would work quite well in the way that Moriyasu is playing, because they're going to sit deep against Spain and Germany, and he can drop deep. He can come anywhere. He's done that all season for Kashima. He's a very good goal scorer. He's got a bit of that fight about him as well, which I think is good for an international stage. So, yeah, 100% Suzuki has to be given a chance in this EAF Cup. I mean, if he's not considered one of the best Japanese strikers in the league, I think we've got to consider what is going on with the scouts and what they're looking at. But yeah, Suzuki should be there. And I've got Muto as well, because he is one that's clever running into the channels. He's more a suit to that, I think, than Asano. I think he's cleverer at that role. I think he's obviously had his injury problems at the start of this season, but get a good run of form for the next month or so, I think he probably should be there. And he's not necessarily in that 23, but one or two injuries is a reasonable player to come in there. Obviously, he's got so much experience. And then the other one, we've spoken about him before, but I think this is a really good opportunity for Ayase Ueda as well. If he can start in this tournament, get himself a few international goals, get himself a bit of confidence at this level, especially playing against South Korea, I think that could be a really good tournament for him. So those are the three that I would look at. I mean, if you're looking at maybe how the under-21s are playing, and you think, oh, Hosoya, you might give a chance to, or Suzuki, then maybe they get a place in the squad. But I don't think any of them are necessarily in consideration for a World Cup place.
Yeah, well, yeah, Yuito Suzuki's one I had written down basically, yeah, on the back of his tour de force against South Korea in the under-23s quarterfinal on Sunday. He was absolutely brilliant. But, yeah, I mean, to say that he would, he might be a chance to get into the Japan squad for the EAFF. But, yeah, he hopefully will get that opportunity. But, yeah, he'll be behind the likes of Suzuki, Wada and Muto to begin with. So, yeah, the possibility of him shining to the point where he's even entering Moriyasu's thoughts for the World Cup, I think is, it's pie in the sky stuff. But I mean, you know, obviously other nations often plump for a youngster completely out of nowhere, don't they, Sam? And I mean, you know, Spain have got a 17-year-old who's already playing for Barcelona, you know, running their central midfield, and, you know, why we can't get a player like that, you know, doing the same sort of thing for Japan is, again, that's a topic of about six different podcasts, but not for this particular one. But Suzuki would be, Yuito Suzuki would be the bolter to end all bolters if he was to make the final 23. But I am fully aware that that is unlikely / impossible to happen. So I don't know if you had anybody behind the striker. Sam, obviously, we'd all love to see Makoto Mitsuta make the 23 for the EAFF Cup. But, I mean, I didn't even have him in my list of possibilities for the World Cup squad. I guess just because of the plethora of names that we mentioned earlier. But, it would be great to see him in that particular squad, though, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I put him as my list because I just love that. I mean, he's had such an impact. I think he will probably make this AF Cup squad, and maybe if he puts on a show in that, he could come into consideration. But there are so many options in this position. I think this is the most difficult for anyone to break into. I think if he was fit, Ryotaro Araki would have been the player that maybe could have made that burst in this. But obviously, he's been out for most of the season through injury. So, yeah, I think that we're struggling with this. I think I put my list was Mitsuta and Morishima are the two players that I think could probably make this squad, and maybe with a good performance. Plus, they've got that Hiroshima link, which seems to get you into this national team. So those were the two. But I think this is such a difficult place to really burst into. You consider everyone that's in the squad currently. I still think Nakajima needs to be given another go, because I think everyone's forgot that he's actually back and he's playing football very well in Portugal. But yeah, so there was too many, I think, ahead of Morishima and Mitsuta. But what a story it would be if Mitsuta broke into the World Cup in his debut season.
Oh, geez, I don't think we would be able to contain ourselves, would we? But Yeah, that would be miraculous. We'll hope that we'll cross the first bridge when we come to it, and hope he makes the EAFFF. How many? I think I threw an extra F in there. If he makes that particular squad. Now, I don't know if you want to work us through the options at fullback, Sam, but basically from here, I just went for one central midfield option, one centre-back option, and a goalkeeper. So we mentioned Gaku Shibasaki earlier. How he keeps getting into these squads is beyond me. Then Moriyasu doesn't really play him at all or show that much faith in him. So for me, he's yesterday's man. I want to see Yuta Higuchi. Obviously, he will make this EAFF squad. And from there, he has to be given a chance to play all three games and to shine. I'm sure he will if given that opportunity. And then for me, he is the most likely, I think, of all of these names that we've mentioned so far to make it into the 23, because I think there might be an extra spot in central midfield. Again, with question marks over Morita, I certainly hope Morita makes it. But I think Higuchi has a real chance here. And of all these names that we're talking about, he would be the one I'd have the highest hopes of actually making the final 23. Then at centre back, I know we've written off Yoshida, but I mean, there's absolutely no question that he's going to be in the 23, right? So in that instance, I don't think Japan are really short of centre-back options. So Taiyo Koga was a name in brackets for me. I hope he makes this squad, but I don't think he would seriously come into consideration for the World Cup 23. And then, the keeper I wanted to mention was obviously Keisuke Osako. He was one of the four in the squad for this international break, but didn't get an opportunity. So I'm hopeful that he'll be the first choice keeper for the EAFF. And if he distinguishes himself there, then hopefully that would be enough to get him past Eiji Kawashima and on to the plane. So I guess wrapping up then, again, feel free to mention as many players as you like. But from central midfield and back, who were the names that you were looking at for as possible bolters?
Well, I'm absolutely with you with Yuta Higuchi. I think I'd have him currently ahead of Shibasaki and Haraguchi in that Japan national team at set in central midfield. He's just a perfect all-round midfielder. He can do all sorts of jobs in that midfield, which is perfect for the way that he's playing with this three-man midfield, because you're tasked to go forward, you're tasked to then go back, you're tasked to do all sorts of things. And he's proven that with Tosu last year, with Kashima so far this year, that he's very good at that, the best Japanese midfielder in the league. So he's definitely going to be in the squad, and I think he's got a very good chance of forcing his way in there, or at least he would do if I was manager. Otherwise in midfield, because another problem we had, I thought, with this international break was that Wataru Endo playing holding midfielder for every game. What is the option if Endo gets injured? And obviously you've got Morita, who's a little bit injury prone as well. He'd probably be the first choice there. But after that, there's a dearth of holding midfielders, and he's not played as well this season as he did last year. But I think Sho Inagaki is probably the one in the J League that probably could do that role, but maybe not to the same level as Endo. But I think he might be the one that is looked at as the possible one that comes in if anything happens to Endo. So it could be a big tournament for him. I think his performances have to improve this season for Nagoya. But if that happens and then he has a decent tournament here, then maybe he puts himself into contention. At centre back, I agree with you with Koga, I think, but I think he's probably short of that at the moment. Nakatani is the one that will probably play here, and it will be the maybe fifth choice for the World Cup. The other one I had, it's the same lines as Koga, is Araki from Hiroshima. I think he's played pretty well this season, very solid in there. I think he's a decent, solid option, but again, probably a lot. Same lines, Koga, not going to get in there. I think there are others. It's not going to make this squad, but when they play in September, I think Seko, the player that went to Grasshoppers, plays pretty much every game there. I think he should be one that should have been tested either here or in September, but maybe he's not going to be playing in this competition, so maybe it's a little bit too late for him. And then goalkeeper, this is a Moriyasu squad, so he probably picks Nishikara and Higashiguchi and tests out those youngsters. But I think it's a big tournament for Tani and Osaka. I think they're kind of in a shootout as to who could be the young. They're probably going to fall to Kawashima anyway, But yes, who has that best tournament out of those two that would be under consideration? Because I think on the balance of it, I think Tani's the better goalkeeper, but Osako's in the better form. So yeah, it's going to be a really interesting one, because if you put in some good performance in that competition, you prove yourself to the manager, then yeah, you're the one in consideration. So that battle is going to be really interesting.
Yes, most definitely. All right, so just before we move on, Sam, you did cut out for a brief second there, so just let me clarify, you were mentioning Ayumu Seko, right, earlier on?
Yes, sorry, I was mentioning Ayumu Seko. Played very well for Grasshopper since he's moved. He's put himself firmly into that first 11, but yeah, he's not been given the chance at international level. I think he probably needed to be in this squad if he was going to make that run into the World Cup, because he can't play, obviously, in July. So yeah, it's probably a bit too late for him, but he's someone who should be on the edge for me.
Yeah, okay, cool, no worries, just making that clear for the listeners. Yeah, because as you started to say his name, yeah, you dropped out for a second, but that's all good, mate. All right, thank you very much. So Sam, any potential candidates you're looking forward to seeing at the EAFF Cup that might possibly work their way into what is a pretty murky situation for the Samurai Blue on both sides of their defence?
Yeah, I think this is the biggest issue, isn't it, for Japan? No one's really set on either side. I think, there's problems both right back and left back. So anyone who listened to the podcast last week will know Fuji should be given a chance in this competition. I think he could potentially prove himself and be, well, especially when you've got Sakai's injury problems, there's definitely a hole at right back. And the other one, Koike, because he can fit both sides and he's comfortable both sides, I think he's got a reasonable chance. And I mean, Yamanaka has played for the national team before and he's in better form now. I don't think he would make it, but he's got a reasonable chance. He's at least a natural left back, which gives him plenty of opportunity. I mean, the problem you've got, I mean, Ryoya Ogawa, I think probably would have made this squad, but obviously he's moved at the wrong time for him to get into the World Cup, I think, by going over to Portugal. So, yeah, there's lots of issues there. I think probably none of them are going to make it. I think if you're looking at potential replacements, especially at right back, you probably look at Sugawara and Hashioka, who are applying their trade over in the Netherlands and Belgium. They're probably the ones that are a bit next in line. And left back, I mean, who knows? They've tried Ito at left back. He's played okay, but not great. I think he'll just go with Sho Sasaki and he'll probably captain this EAFF team.
So before we leave Japan and national teams as a whole, we did want to give a shout out to the under-21s who are taking part in the under-23 Asian Cup. And we mentioned it briefly a couple of minutes ago, chatting about Yuito Suzuki. He had an absolute stormer against South Korea in the quarterfinal last Sunday, Japan winning 3-0 to set up a semifinal against the hosts, Uzbekistan, in the early hours of Thursday morning Japan time. The winner of that game will play either Australia or Saudi Arabia in the final. So, yeah, Suzuki was, I think I described it as a tour de force earlier, and it was, an absolutely stunning performance from the Shimizu forward. He opened the scoring with a free kick that deflected in off the Korean wall in the 22nd minute. And then after Mao Hosoya of Kashiwa spurned several chances to add to Japan's lead. I guess many of us feared that those mischances might come back to haunt Japan against the old enemy. Well, it was Suzuki who shot powerfully in the 65th minute. It was saved by the South Korean keeper, but Hosoya got to the loose ball just before the scrambling keeper to poke home and double Japan's lead. And then Suzuki saved the best for last and put the icing on the cake with 10 minutes left with a brilliant turn and finish from the edge of the box. So, yeah, hopefully Mr. Moriyasu was watching. And, a performance like that, well, obviously Japan, hopefully still have two games to play in this competition. Maybe a performance like that has, seen Yuito Suzuki firmly enter Moriyasu's thoughts for a spot in the EAFF Cup coming up next month. So, well, yes, Sam, Go Oya and his side deserve all the credit, as we know, Japan playing an under-21s team in this under-23 tournament. So, to make it all the way to the semifinals and, to sweep South Korea aside in the manner that they did was absolutely tremendous.
Yeah, well, it's an impressive result, isn't it, against South Korea, and it's an established South Korea under-23 side. A lot of them are 23 at the moment. They've got a lot more experience than that Japan team has, but they've done, yeah, incredibly well. Considering they use in that group stage, they've kind of rotated around as well. It's not like they've had a set first 11. They've kind of given chances to pretty much everyone in that team, and yeah, got through that group and then turned on the style against South Korea. And it's great to see both Suzuki and Osoya well in the goals throughout the tournament. And yeah, good luck to them against Uzbekistan. I think they've got tomorrow. I think it'll kick off after this podcast is released. I'm not 100% sure of the times, but yeah, Uzbekistan there, and then hopefully the final at the weekend. And yeah, unfortunately for Shimizu, that Japan have two more games. Suzuki won't be able to play at the weekend because he'll have either a final or a third place playoff to do, and I think Matsuoka as well. So unfortunate for Shimizu, who need their players, and they need results pretty quickly. But yeah, great for Japan. They're putting on a real show over there.
Okay, and can you believe it? Yes, on the J-Talk podcast, we are giving coverage to the 2022 Levain Cup. Sam's been nudging me for a few weeks now, and here we are, listeners. The playoff stage of the Levain Cup was played over the past two Saturdays, the 4th and the 11th of June. But this playoff stage is not to be confused with the prime stage, which will take place in August and is basically a fancy name for the quarterfinals onwards of the competition. So, Sam, a couple of these ties were basically already settled back after the first legs, weren't they? So there wasn't an enormous amount of intrigue in the Nagoya versus Kyoto or indeed Hiroshima versus Sapporo battles over the past weekend, as Grampus had hit Kyoto for 6 in the first leg, and Hiroshima had romped to a 3-0 away win over Sapporo in the first legs.
It was not really worth watching the second leg, because I thought Hiroshima in that first leg against Sapporo just kind of eased past them. Sapporo's regular defensive frailties cost them, especially in the second half. 2 goals for Junior Santos, which will do his confidence the world of good. And then that second leg, it was a reasonable game. Sapporo gave himself a slight chance with that Aoki goal before half time, but yeah, it was not enough, and that man Mitsuta obviously got on the score sheet to equalise and send Hiroshima through. As you mentioned, that Nagoya game absolutely battered Kyoto in that first game. Kyoto rested a few players for that. Utaka didn't start that first leg, amongst others, and yeah, Nagoya really made them pay with that. So a thumping 6-1 victory, and yeah, Manabu Saito scored what probably going to be his last goal for Nagoya. I think he's on his way to Suwon, I think, in Korea. So it was good to see him end his time with a goal. And yeah, Nagoya romped to victory. I mean, also, someone we didn't mention in this Japan thing, Mateus has been in Japan for so many years now. Why is he potentially able to convert to Japan? I mean, have we got enough time to do that? Then he'd be making my squad. But yeah, I think that needs another podcast, and probably needs Scott McIntyre with his conversions to do that. But yeah, that's otherwise the other two ties. Cerezo Osaka beat Shonan 1-0 after that first leg, and then it was game over pretty quickly. In that second leg, they scored 2 goals inside 15 minutes through Jonic and Tomeda, and from then it was tie over. And the only real action, the best to watch, was the Avispa versus Kashima tie, and it saw the return of chanting as well.
Yeah, right. So definitely wanted to ask you about that. The second leg at the Kashima Soccer Stadium on Saturday, with the tie very much on a knife edge after, yes, Avispa won 1-0 at the Best Denki Stadium the previous Saturday, thanks to a goal from Yuya Yamagishi. And yes, with again restrictions on the crowd number, it was a 50% capacity maximum at the Kashima Soccer Stadium, and the supporters were spaced out. But yes, chanting was reintroduced on a trial, of course, for the first time in well over 2 years in the J League. So as a viewing experience, Sam, again, it wasn't obviously the full blooded J League experience, but was it noticeable? You could notice a change in atmosphere with the supporters able to really be able to make their voices heard again.
To be honest, to me, it didn't make too much of a difference. I think it actually made it worse. But you've got, I think they only had 9,000 in attendance, and really they had the capacity to go to 20,000 to fill half of that stadium. So it was just 9,000, then just a small pocket of that 9,000 was making noise. I think, yeah, it just seemed quite desolate and empty, which was disappointing for me. I mean, I know that I think it's such a big thing for supporters, especially in Japan, to be able to chant. It makes the atmosphere better. And so maybe I'm not the right person to really be discussing this, because as a neutral watching on his computer screen a few thousand miles away, it didn't really do anything for me. I mean, it wasn't that loud. It wasn't, the atmosphere didn't seem more intense or anything like that. I preferred it when it was a full stadium and everyone's banging and making some sort of noise. But it's a crucial part of the way that they're going to get chanting back as a whole. Hopefully the testing all went well and there are no issues that have come out of this. And we just have to get through these testing phases. I think there are a few more coming next month, and hopefully all go well. And by the end of the season, or at least maybe in a couple of months' time, we can get back to full capacity, full chanting, and a proper Japanese J-League experience. Because, yeah, this was still some way from that.
Yeah, no, fair enough. All right, so obviously baby steps then at this stage of proceedings. But, yes, it is at least some sort of progress. So, yeah, hopefully the punters that rocked up to Kashima enjoyed their afternoon. But, well, if they were of an Antlers persuasion, ultimately it ended in disappointment. It looked like Antlers were cruising through after Everaldo, remember him, and Hayato Nakama scored within 6 minutes of each other towards the end of the first half that had Daniel H. Writing off the Levain Cup. He didn't want to have anything to do with it. But in the fifth minute of first half stoppage time, Daniel H's mood changed notably after Yamagishi, who scored, of course, the only goal in the first leg, got a goal back for Fukuoka. And that was to prove to be the winner of the tie as Fukuoka advanced on away goals after the 2-2 aggregate. So Antlers were unable to break through in the second half. Fukuoka held them at bay and it made it through to just their second ever trip to the Levain Cup quarterfinals. The previous was in 2016. It's also been a while between drinks for Hiroshima. It's their first quarterfinal in 3 years for them. They are twice losing finalists in this competition in 2010 and 2014. While for Nagoya and Cerezo, who, as Sam's mentioned, yeah, Nagoya settled their tie in the first leg against Kyoto, and Cerezo swept aside Shonan in the second leg of theirs. Well, of course, those two contested the final last season, and Nagoya are the defending champions and Cerezo the runners-up. So those four clubs enter the prime stage, as we like to call it over here, with, yes, the four ACL clubs, Kawasaki, Yokohama F. Marinos, Kobe, and Urawa. I'm not sure exactly when the draw is going to be taking place. It usually happens on the Fuji TV's late night sports program, but as to my knowledge, it hasn't happened yet. So we'll wait and see. And yeah, those are quarterfinals will be played in August. So yeah, exciting times. Hope you enjoyed that Levain Cup update, listeners. We know it's been a long time coming. And so all that's left to do for us, Sam, after this, yes, very lengthy international break, is to look forward to the return of J1 on Saturday. Although I'm sure you're not looking forward to the workload, as yes, all nine games are on Saturday, four of them at 6 o'clock and at 5 at 7 p.m. For me, it's a special day. It's the one game of the season I'm actually allowed out for, as FC Tokyo visit Shonan at the Lemon Gas Stadium. Really looking forward to getting out the house and getting back to Hiratsuka Central Park for that one. Obviously, hopefully the St. Gallen beer tent will be there again, and yeah, food trucks are plenty. Be looking forward to sample some of their wares before hopefully Tokyo turn on a decent performance. But I'm sure that doesn't qualify as Sam's pick of the weekend. There are a few intriguing looking games in prospect. So which way are you plumping this week, Sam?
Yeah, I won't try and spoil your afternoon by going Shonan Tokyo as my game of the day, because make that a 0-0. But I think, yeah, there are some very good games. I think Kawasaki Sapporo is the one I have my eye on. Obviously, Frontale in a bit of dodgy form, but they're going against the Sapporo team. If you score one against them, you'll probably score eight. So that could be a really exciting game. Maybe Misha Petrovic has tweaked things during the break and really reset his defence, although he conceded four in two games against Hiroshima. So that'll be an exciting one. And otherwise, I've got my eye on, it's not maybe not the greatest game necessarily, but Shimizu versus Avispa. Obviously, it's Zé Ricardo's first game in charge of Shimizu Espoo, so it'd be really interesting to see what sort of changes he can make there, because I've maintained that there is quality in that Shimizu side, but it needs to be harnessed, and maybe he's the man to do that. And it's obviously a very tough ask against a very good defensive team in Avispa, so that's an intriguing one. But yeah, you look up and down these games, they're all exciting. They're all kicking off later for me, which is great. 10 a.m. is the earliest kickoff, so I'm not going to complain about that at all. But yeah, I think we're in for a really exciting return to action.
Yeah, most definitely. They really some really intriguing ties. I mean, yeah, two teams that have seriously underperformed in the first half of the season. Urawa and Nagoya face off at Saitama Stadium at 7 o'clock. That should be a fascinating game. And also at seven, you've obviously just mentioned Hiroshima. The Sanfrecce host Cerezo Osaka, and both of those teams obviously entered the international break in good form and entrenched in the top half of the table. So that's a really interesting looking game as well. But yeah, it's hard to look past Kawasaki and Sapporo, isn't it? Of course, it's been a long time since Frontale lost two games in a row, and probably even longer since they went three without a win. So, yeah, they'll be looking to bounce back. I'm sure they've been like wounded animals for the 3 weeks of this international break, and they're ready to unleash on Sapporo. And, well, yeah, that could just about be a rugby score, I think, at Todoroki on Saturday at 7 p.m. But, yeah, it will be great to have J1 back, of course. And for me personally, great to actually get to a game for a change. But, yeah, overall, it's been an interesting and an eye-opening international break, I suppose, for the Samurai Blue. But I guess as we entered it, we're leaving it with, yeah, a number of questions for Mr. Moriyasu, and hoping that he's scratching around for the answers. But I guess we can leave it there, Sam. It's been great to catch up and obviously, yeah, share our thoughts on the national team and, yeah, which players we think are already on the plane to Qatar. Obviously, yeah, a lot can happen in the next 5 months, but an interesting chat at this stage of proceedings. So, yeah, enjoy the return of J1 and looking forward to rounding it all up with you on next week's episode.
Thank you very much. Enjoy your day down in Hiratsuka. I hope the beer's nice. I've heard it's very good. So, yeah, I'm sure you'll have a wonderful time. And hopefully for you, FC Tokyo get a positive result. But, yeah, hopefully just in general, we should be in for a fantastic return to action. And without the headaches of the national team, we can leave that for a month or so.
Hear, hear. Very well said. All right. So that's it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank our supporters on Patreon for their ongoing support. And listeners, of course, we'd like to thank you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back to round up J1 Match Day 17, the halfway point of the season, in next week's episode. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.